Hachette Audio presents Circe, a novel. Written by Madeline Miller, read by Perdita Weeks. This program includes a Mac and PC compatible PDF of the cast of characters. For Nathaniel, Nostos. Chapter 1. When I was born, the name for what I was did not exist. They called me Nymph, assuming I would be like my mother and aunts and thousand cousins. Least of the lesser goddesses, our powers were so modest they could scarcely ensure our eternities. We spoke to fish and nurtured flowers, coaxed drops from the clouds or salt from the waves. That word, nymph, paced out the length and breadth of our futures. In our language, it means not just goddess, but bride. My mother was one of them, a naiad, guardian of fountains and streams. She caught my father's eye when he came to visit the halls of her own father, Oceanus. Helios and Oceanus were often at each other's tables in those days. They were cousins and equal in age, though they did not look it. My father glowed bright as just-forged bronze, while Oceanus had been born with rheumy eyes and a white beard to his lap. Yet they were both titans, and preferred each other's company to those new squeaking gods upon Olympus, who had not seen the making of the world. Oceanus's palace was a great wonder, set deep in the earth's rock. Its high-arched halls were gilded, the stone floors smoothed by centuries of divine feet. Through every room ran the faint sound of Oceanus's river, source of the world's fresh waters, so dark you could not tell where it ended and the rock bed began. On its banks grew grass and soft grey flowers, and also the unnumbered children of Oceanus, naiads and nymphs and river gods. Otter sleek, laughing, their faces bright against the dusky air. They passed golden goblets among themselves and wrestled, playing games of love. In their midst, outshining all that lily beauty, sat my mother. Her hair was a warm brown, each strand so lustrous it seemed lit from within. She would have felt my father's gaze, hot as gusts from a bonfire. I see her arrange her dress so it drapes just so over her shoulders. I see her dab her fingers, glinting in the water. I have seen her do 1,000 such tricks 1,000 times. My father always fell for them. He believed the world's natural order was to please him. "Who is that?" my father said to Oceanus. Oceanus had many golden-eyed grandchildren from my father already, and was glad to think of more. "My daughter Perse. She is yours if you want her." The next day, my father found her by her fountain pool in the upper world. It was a beautiful place, crowded with fat-headed narcissus woven over with oak branches. There was no muck, no slimy frogs, only clean, round stones giving way to grass. Even my father, who cared nothing for the subtleties of nymph arts, admired it. My mother knew he was coming. Frail she was, but crafty, with a mind like a spike-toothed eel. She saw where the path to power lay for such as her, and it was not in bastards and riverbank tumbles. When he stood before her, arrayed in his glory, she laughed at him. "Lie with you? Why should I?" My father, of course, might have taken what he wanted. But Helios flattered himself that all women went eager to his bed, slave girls and divinities alike. His altars smoked with the proof, offerings from big-bellied mothers and happy byblows. "It is marriage," she said to him, "or nothing. And if it is marriage, be sure. You may have what girls you like in the field, but you will bring none home, for only I will hold sway in your halls." Conditions, constrainment. These were novelties to my father, and gods love nothing more than novelty. "A bargain," he said, and gave her a necklace to seal it, one of his own making, strung with beads of rarest amber. Later, when I was born, he gave her a second strand, and another for each of my three siblings. I do not know what she treasured more, the luminous beads themselves or the envy of her sisters when she wore them. I think she would have gone right on collecting them into eternity until they hung from her neck like a yoke on an ox if the high gods had not stopped her. By then they had learned what the four of us were. "You may have other children," they told her. only not with him. But other husbands did not give amber beads. It was the only time I ever saw her weep. At my birth, an aunt, I will spare you her name because my tale is full of aunts, washed and wrapped me. Another tended to my mother, painting the red back on her lips, brushing her hair with ivory combs. A third went to the door to admit my father. A girl, my mother said to him, wrinkling her nose. But my father did not mind his daughters, who were sweet-tempered and golden as the first press of olives. Men and gods paid dearly for the chance to breed from their blood, and my father's treasury was said to rival that of the king of the gods himself. He placed his hand on my head in blessing. "She will make a fair match," he said. "How fair?" my mother wanted to know. This might be consolation if I could be traded for something better. My father considered, fingering the wisps of my hair, examining my eyes and the cut of my cheeks. "A prince, I think." "A prince?" my mother said. "You do not mean a mortal." The revulsion was plain on her face. Once when I was young, I asked what mortals looked like. My father said, "You may say they are shaped like us, but only as the worm is shaped like the whale." My mother had been simpler, like savage bags of rotten flesh. "Surely she will marry a son of Zeus," my mother insisted. She had already begun imagining herself at feasts upon Olympus, sitting at Queen Hera's right hand. "No, her hair is streaked like a lynx, and her chin. There is a sharpness to it that is less than pleasing." My mother did not argue further. Like everyone, she knew the stories of Helios's temper when he was crossed. "However gold he shines, do not forget his fire." She stood. Her belly was gone, her waist re-knitted, her cheeks fresh and virgin rosy. All our kind recover quickly, but she was faster still. One of the daughters of Oceanus, who shoot their babes like roe. "Come," she said, "let us make a better one." I grew quickly. My infancy was the work of hours, my toddlerhood a few moments beyond that. An aunt stayed on, hoping to curry favor with my mother, and named me Hawk, Circe, for my yellow eyes and the strange, thin sound of my crying. But when she realized that my mother no more noticed her service than the ground at her feet, she vanished. "Mother," I said, "aunt is gone." My mother didn't answer. My father had already departed for his chariot in the sky, and she was winding her hair with flowers, preparing to leave through the secret ways of water, to join her sisters on their grassy riverbanks. I might have followed, but then I would have had to sit all day at my aunt's feet while they gossiped of things I did not care for and could not understand. So I stayed. My father's halls were dark and silent. His palace was a neighbor to Oceanus's, buried in the earth's rock, and its walls were made of polished obsidian. Why not? They could have been anything in the world. Blood-red marble from Egypt or balsam from Araby. My father had only to wish it so. But he liked the way the obsidian reflected his light, the way its slick surfaces caught fire as he passed. Of course, he did not consider how black it would be when he was gone. My father has never been able to imagine the world without himself in it. I could do what I liked at those times, light a torch and run to see the dark flames follow me, lie on the smooth earth floor and wear small holes in its surface with my fingers. There were no grubs or worms, though I didn't know to miss them. Nothing lived in those halls, except for us. When my father returned at night, the ground rippled like a flank of a horse, and the holes I had made smoothed themselves over. A moment later, my mother returned, smelling of flowers. She ran to greet him, and he let her hang from his neck, accepted wine, went to his great silver chair. I followed at his heels. "Welcome home, father, welcome home." While he drank his wine, he played draughts. No one was allowed to play with him. He placed the stone counters, spun the board, and placed them again. My mother drenched her voice in honey. "Will you not come to bed, my love?" She turned before him slowly, showing the lushness of her figure as if she were roasting on a spit. Most often he would leave his game then, but sometimes he did not. And those were my favorite times, for my mother would go, slamming the myrrh wood door behind her. At my father's feet, the whole world was made of gold. The light came from everywhere at once, his yellow skin, his lambent eyes, the bronze flashing of his hair. His flesh was hot as a brazier, and I pressed as close as he would let me, like a lizard to noonday rocks. My aunt had said that some of the lesser gods could scarcely bear to look at him, but I was his daughter and blood, and I stared at his face so long that when I looked away it was pressed upon my vision still, glowing from the floors, the shining walls and inlaid tables, even my own skin. "What would happen," I said, "if a mortal saw you in your fullest glory?" "He would be burned to ash in a second." "What if a mortal saw me?" My father smiled. I listened to the draft pieces moving, the familiar rasp of marble against wood. "The mortal would count himself fortunate." "I would not burn him?" "Of course not," he said. "But my eyes are like yours." "No," he said. "Look." His gaze fell upon a log at the fireplace's side. It glowed, then flamed, then fell as ash to the ground. "And that is the least of my powers. Can you do as much?" All night I stared at those logs. I could not. My sister was born, and my brother soon after that. I cannot say how long it was exactly. Divine days fall like water from a cataract, and I had not learned yet the mortal trick of counting them. You'd think my father would have taught us better, for he, after all, knows every sunrise. But even he used to call my brother and sister twins. Certainly, from the moment of my brother's birth, they were entwined like minks. My father blessed them both with one hand. "You," he said to my luminous sister Pasiphae, "you will marry an eternal son of Zeus." He used his prophecy voice, the one that spoke of future certainties. My mother glowed to hear it, thinking of the robes she would wear to Zeus's feasts. "And you," he said to my brother in his regular voice, resonant, clear as a summer's morning. "Every son reflects upon his mother." My mother was pleased with this and took it as permission to name him. She called him Perses for herself. The two of them were clever and quickly saw how things stood. They loved to sneer at me behind their ermine paws. "Her eyes are yellow as pierce. Her voice is screechy as an owl. She is called hawk, but she should be called goat for her ugliness." Those were their earliest attempts at barbs. Still dull, but day by day they sharpened. I learned to avoid them, and they soon found better sport amongst the infant naiads and riverlords in Oceanus's halls. When my mother went to her sister's, they followed and established dominion over all our pliant cousins, hypnotized like minnows before the pike's mouth. They had 100 tormenting games that they devised. "Come, Melia," they coaxed. "It is the Olympian fashion to cut off your hair to the nape of your neck. How will you ever catch a husband if you don't let us do it?" When Melia saw herself shorn like a hedgehog and cried, they would laugh till the caverns echoed. I left them to it. I preferred my father's quiet halls and spent every second I could at my father's feet. One day, perhaps as a reward, he offered to take me with him to visit his sacred herd of cows. This was a great honor, for it meant I might ride in his golden chariot and see the animals that were the envy of all the gods. 50 pure white heifers that delighted his eye on his daily path over the earth. I leaned over the chariot's jeweled side, watching in wonder at the earth passing beneath, the rich green of forests, the jagged mountains, and the wide, outflung blue of the ocean. I looked for mortals, but we were too high up to see them. The herd lived on the grassy island of Thrinakia with two of my half-sisters as caretakers. When we arrived, these sisters ran at once to my father and hung from his neck, exclaiming. Of all my father's beautiful children, they were among the most beautiful, with skin and hair like molten gold. Lampetia and Phaethusa their names were. Radiant and shining. "And who is this you've brought with you? She must be one of Perse's children. Look at her eyes." "Of course." Lampetia, I thought it was Lampetia, stroked my hair. "Darling, your eyes are nothing to worry about. Nothing at all. Your mother is very beautiful, but she has never been strong." "My eyes are like yours," I said. How sweet. No, darling, ours are bright as fire, and our hair like sun on the water. You're clever to keep yours in a braid, Phaethusa said. The brown streaking does not look so bad, then. It is a shame you cannot hide your voice the same way. She could never speak again. That would work, would it not, sister? So it would, they smiled. Shall we go to see the cows? I had never seen a cow before, of any kind, but it did not matter. The animals were so obviously beautiful that I needed no comparison. Their coats were pure as lily petals and their eyes gentle and long-lashed. Their horns had been gilded, that was my sister's doing, and when they bent to crop the grass, their necks dipped like dancers. In the sunset light, their backs gleamed glossy soft. Oh, I said, may I touch one? No, my father said. Shall we tell you their names? That is Whiteface, and that is Brighteyes, and that is Darling. There is Lovely Girl, and Pretty, and Golden Horn, and Gleaming. There is Darling, and there is... You named Darling already, I said. You said that one was Darling. I pointed to the first cow peacefully chewing. My sisters looked at each other, then at my father. A single golden glance, but he was gazing at his cows in abstracted glory. You must be mistaken, they said. This one, we just said, is Darling. And this one is Starbright, and this one Flashing, and... My father said, what is this? A scab upon Pretty? Immediately my sisters were falling over themselves. What scab? Oh, it cannot be. A wicked Pretty to have hurt yourself. A wicked thing that hurt you. I leaned close to see. It was a very small scab, smaller than my smallest fingernail, but my father was frowning. You will fix it by tomorrow. My sisters bobbed their heads. Of course, we are so sorry. We stepped again into the chariot, and my father took up the silver-tipped reins. My sisters pressed a last few kisses to his hands. Then the horses leapt, swinging us through the sky. The first constellations were already peeping through the dimming light. I remembered how my father had once told me that on Earth there were men called astronomers whose task it was to keep track of his rising and setting. They were held in highest esteem among mortals, kept in palaces as counselors of kings. But sometimes my father lingered over one thing or another and threw their calculations into despair. Then those astronomers were hauled before the kings they served and killed as frauds. My father had smiled when he told me. It was what they deserved, he said. Helios the sun was bound to no will but his own, and none might say what he would do. Father, I said that day, are we late enough to kill astronomers? We are, he answered, shaking the jingling reins. The horses surged forward, and the world blurred beneath us, the shadows of night smoking from the sea's edge. I did not look. There was a twisting feeling in my chest, like cloth being wrung dry. I was thinking of those astronomers. I imagined them, low as worms, sagging and bent. Please, they cried on bony knees. It wasn't our fault. The sun itself was late. The sun is never late, the kings answered from their thrones. It is blasphemy to say so. You must die. And so the axes fell and chopped those pleading men in two. Father, I said, I feel strange. You are hungry, he said. It is past time for the feast. Your sisters should be ashamed of themselves for delaying us. I ate well at dinner, yet the feeling lingered. I must have had an odd look on my face. For Perseus and Pasiphae began to snicker from their couch. Did you swallow a frog? No, I said. This only made them laugh harder, rubbing their draped limbs on each other like snakes polishing their scales. My sister said, and how were our father's golden heifers? Beautiful. Perseus laughed. She doesn't know. Have you ever heard of anyone so stupid? Never, my sister said. I shouldn't have asked, but I was still drifting in my thoughts, seeing those severed bodies sprawled on marble floors. What don't I know? My sister's perfect mink face. That he fucks them, of course. That's how he makes new ones. He turns into a bull and sires their calves, then cooks the ones that get old. That's why everyone thinks they're immortal. He does not. They howled, pointing at my reddened cheeks. The sound drew my mother. She loved my siblings' japes. We're telling Circe about the cows, my brother told her. She didn't know. My mother's laughter, silver as a fountain down its rocks. Stupid Cersei. Such were my years then. I would like to say that all the while I waited to break out, but the truth is, I'm afraid I might have floated on, believing those dull miseries were all there was, until the end of days. Chapter 2. Word came that one of my uncles was going to be punished. I had never seen him, but I had heard his name over and over in my family's doomy whispers. Prometheus. Long ago, when mankind was still shivering and shrinking in their caves, he had defied the will of Zeus and brought them the gift of fire. From its flames had sprung all the arts and profits of civilization that jealous Zeus had hoped to keep from their hands. For such rebellion, Prometheus had been sent to live in the underworld's deepest pit until a proper torment could be devised. And now Zeus announced the time was come. My other uncles ran to my father's palace, beards flapping, fear spilling from their mouths. They were a motley group, rivermen with muscles like the trunks of trees, brine-soaked mergods with crabs hanging from their beards, stringy old-timers with seal meat in their teeth. Most of them were not uncles at all, but some sort of grand cousin. They were titans like my father and grandfather, like Prometheus, the remnants of the war among the gods, those who were not broken or in chains, who had made their peace with Zeus's thunderbolts. There had only been titans once, at the dawning of the world. Then my great-uncle Cronos had heard a prophecy that his child would one day overthrow him. When his wife Rhea birthed her first babe, he tore it damp from her arms and swallowed it whole. Four more children were born, and he ate them all the same, until at last, in desperation, Rhea swaddled a stone and gave it to him to swallow instead. Cronos was deceived, and the rescued baby, Zeus, was taken to Mount Dicte to be raised in secret. When he was grown up, he rose indeed, plucking the thunderbolt from the sky and forcing poisonous herbs down his father's throat. His brothers and sisters, living in their father's stomach, were vomited forth. They sprang to their brother's side, naming themselves Olympians, after the great peak where they set their thrones. The old gods divided themselves. Many threw their strength to Cronos, but my father and grandfather joined Zeus. Some said it was because Helios had always hated Cronos's vaunting pride. Others whispered that his prophetic gift gave him foreknowledge of the outcome of the war. The battles rent the skies, the air itself burned, and gods clawed the flesh from each other's bones. The land was drenched in boiling gouts of blood so potent that rare flowers sprang up where they fell. At last Zeus's strength prevailed. He clapped those who had defied him into chains, and the remaining titans he stripped of their powers, bestowing them on his brothers and sisters and the children he had bred. My uncle Nereus, once the mighty ruler of the sea, was now lackey to its new god, Poseidon. My uncle Proteus lost his palace, and his wives were taken for bed slaves. Only my father and grandfather suffered no diminishment, no loss of place. The Titans sneered. Were they supposed to be grateful? Helios and Oceanus had turned the tide of war. Everyone knew it. Zeus should have loaded them with new powers, new appointments, but he was afraid, for their strength already matched his own. They looked to my father, waiting for his protest, the flaring of his great fire. But Helios only returned to his halls beneath the earth, far from Zeus's sky-bright gaze. Centuries had passed. The earth's wounds had healed, and the peace had held. But the grudges of gods are as deathless as their flesh. And on feast nights, my uncles gathered close at my father's side. I loved the way they lowered their eyes when they spoke to him, the way they went silent and attentive when he shifted in his seat. The wine bowls emptied and the torches waned. "It has been long enough," my uncles whispered. "We are strong again. Think what your fire might do if you set it free. You are the greatest of the old blood, greater even than Oceanus, greater than Zeus himself, if only you wish it." My father smiled. "Brothers," he said, "what talk is this? Is there not smoke and savor for all? This Zeus does well enough." Zeus, if he had heard, would have been satisfied. But he could not see what I saw plain on my father's face, those unspoken hanging words. "This Zeus does well enough. For now." My uncles rubbed their hands and smiled back. They went away, bent over their hopes, thinking what they could not wait to do when Titans ruled again. It was my first lesson. Beneath the smooth, familiar face of things is another that waits to tear the world in two. Now my uncles were crowding into my father's hall, eyes rolling in fear. Prometheus's sudden punishment was a sign, they said, that Zeus and his kind were moving against us at last. The Olympians would never truly be happy until they destroyed us utterly. We should stand with Prometheus, or no, we should speak against him to ward off Zeus's thunderstroke from our own heads. I was in my customary place at father's feet. I lay silent so they would not notice and send me away, but I felt my chest roiling with that overwhelming possibility. The war revived. Our halls blasted wide with thunderbolts, Athena, Zeus's warrior daughter, hunting us down with her gray spear, her brother in slaughter, Ares, by her side. We would be chained and cast into fiery pits from which there was no escape. My father spoke calm and golden at their center. Come, brothers. If Prometheus is to be punished, it is only because he has earned it. Let us not chase after conspiracy. But my uncles fretted on. The punishment is to be public. It is an insult, a lesson they teach us. Look what happens to Titans who do not obey. My father's light had taken on a keen white edge. This is the chastisement of a renegade and no more. Prometheus was led astray by his foolish love for mortals. There is no lesson here for a Titan, do you understand? My uncles nodded, on their faces disappointment braided with relief. No blood, for now. The punishment of a god was a rare and terrible thing, and talk ran wild through our halls. Prometheus could not be killed, but there were many hellish torments that could take death's place. Would it be knives or swords, or limbs torn off, red-hot spikes or a wheel of fire? The naiads swooned into each other's laps. The riverlords postured, faces dark with excitement. You cannot know how frightened gods are of pain. There is nothing more foreign to them, and so nothing they ache more deeply to see. On the appointed day, the doors of my father's receiving hall were thrown open. Huge torches, carbuncled with jewels, glowed from the walls, and by their light gathered nymphs and gods of every variety. The slender dryads flowed out of their forests, and the stony oreads ran down from their crags. My mother was there with her naiad sisters. The horse-shouldered river gods crowded in beside the fish-white sea nymphs and their lords of salt. Even the great Titans came. My father, of course, and Oceanus, but also shape-shifting Proteus and Nereus of the sea. My aunt Selene, who drives her silver horses across the night sky, and the four winds led by my icy uncle Boreas. 1,000 avid eyes. The only ones missing were Zeus and his Olympians. They disdained our underground gatherings. The word was they had already held their own private session of torment in the clouds. Charge of the punishment had been given to a Fury, one of the infernal goddesses of vengeance who dwell among the dead. My family was in its usual place of preeminence, and I stood at the front of that great throng, my eyes fixed upon the door. Behind me, the naiads and river gods jostled and whispered. I hear they have serpents for hair. No, they have scorpion tails and eyes dripping blood. The doorway was empty. Then at once it was not. Her face was grey and pitiless, as if cut from living rock, and from her back dark wings lifted, jointed like a vulture's. A forked tongue flicked from her lips. On her head snakes writhed, green and thin as worms, weaving living ribbons through her hair. I bring the prisoner. Her voice echoed off the ceiling, raw and baying, like a hunting dog calling down its quarry. She strode into the hall. In her right hand was a whip, its tip rasping faintly as it dragged along the floor. In her other hand stretched a length of chain, and at its end followed Prometheus. He wore a thick white blindfold and the remnants of a tunic around his waist. His hands were bound and his feet too, yet he did not stumble. I heard an aunt beside me whisper that the fetters had been made by the great god of smiths, Hephaestus himself, so not even Zeus could break them. The Fury rose up on her vulture wings and drove the manacles high into the wall. Prometheus dangled from them, his arms drawn taut, his bones showing knobs through the skin. Even I, who knew so little of discomfort, felt the ache of it. My father would say something, I thought, or one of the other gods. Surely they would give him some sort of acknowledgement, a word of kindness. They were his family, after all. But Prometheus hung silent and alone. The Fury did not bother with a lecture. She was a goddess of torment and understood the eloquence of violence. The sound of the whip was a crack, like oaken branches breaking. Prometheus's shoulders jerked and a gash opened in his side long as my arm. All around me, indrawn breaths hissed like water on hot rocks. The Fury lifted her lash again, crack! A bloodied strip tore from his back. She began to carve in earnest, each blow falling on the next, peeling his flesh away in long lines that crossed and recrossed his skin. The only sound was the snap of the whip and Prometheus's muffled, explosive breaths. The tendons stood out in his neck. Someone pushed at my back, trying for a better view. The wounds of gods heal fast, but the Fury knew her business and was faster. Blow after blow she struck until the leather was soaked. I had understood gods could bleed, but I had never seen it. He was one of the greatest of our kind, and the drops that fell from him were golden, smearing his back with a terrible beauty. Still the Fury whipped on. Hours passed, perhaps days, but even gods cannot watch a whipping for eternity. The blood and agony began to grow tedious. They remembered their comforts, the banquets that were waiting on their pleasure, the soft couches laid with purple, ready to enfold their limbs. One by one they drifted off, and after a final lash the Fury followed, for she deserved a feast after such work. The blindfold had slipped from my uncle's face. His eyes were closed and his chin drooped on his chest. His back hung in gilded shreds. I had heard my uncle say that Zeus had given him the chance to beg on his knees for lesser punishment. He had refused. I was the only one left. The smell of ichor drenched the air, thick as honey. The rivulets of molten blood were still tracing down his legs. My pulse struck in my veins. Did he know I was there? I took a careful step towards him. His chest rose and fell with a soft, rasping sound. Lord Prometheus? My voice was thin in the echoing room. His head lifted to me. Open, his eyes were handsome, large and dark and long-lashed. His cheeks were smooth and beardless, yet there was something about him that was as ancient as my grandfather. I could bring you nectar, I said. His gaze rested on mine. I would thank you for that, he said. His voice was resonant as aged wood. It was the first time I had heard it. He had not cried out once in all his torment. I turned. My breaths came fast as I walked through the corridors to the feasting hall, filled with laughing gods. Across the room, the Fury was toasting with an immense goblet embossed with a gorgon's leering face. She had not forbidden anyone to speak to Prometheus, but that was nothing. Her business was offense. I imagined her infernal voice howling out my name. I imagined manacles rattling on my wrists and the whip striking from the air. But my mind could imagine no further than that. I had never felt a lash. I did not know the color of my blood. I trembled so much, I had to carry the cup in two hands. What would I say if someone stopped me? But the passageways were quiet as I walked back through them. In the great hall, Prometheus was silent in his chains. His eyes had closed again and his wounds shone in the torchlight. I hesitated. I do not sleep, he said. Will you lift the cup for me? I flushed. Of course he could not hold it himself. I stepped forward so close that I could feel the heat rising from his shoulders. The ground was wet with his fallen blood. I raised the cup to his lips and he drank. I watched his throat moving gently. His skin was beautiful, the color of polished walnut. It smelt of green moss drenched with rain. You are a daughter of Helios, are you not? he said when he had finished and I'd stepped back. Yes, the question stung. If I had been a proper daughter, he would not have had to ask. I would have been perfect and gleaming with beauty, poured straight from my father's source. Thank you for your kindness. I did not know if I was kind. I felt I did not know anything. He spoke carefully, almost tentatively, yet his treason had been so brazen. My mind struggled with the contradiction. Bold action and bold manner are not the same. Are you hungry? I asked. I could bring you food. I do not think I will ever be hungry again. It was not piteous, as it might have been in a mortal. We gods eat as we sleep, because it is one of life's great pleasures, not because we have to. We may decide one day not to obey our stomachs if we are strong enough. I did not doubt Prometheus was. After all those hours at my father's feet, I had learned to nose out power where it lay. Some of my uncles had less scent than the chairs they sat on, but my grandfather, Oceanus, smelled deep as rich river mud, and my father like a searing blaze of just-fed fire. Prometheus's green moss scent filled the room. I looked down at the empty cup, willing my courage. You aided mortals, I said. That is why you are punished. It is. Will you tell me, what is a mortal like? It was a child's question, but he nodded gravely. There is no single answer. They are each different. The only thing they share is death. You know the word? I know it, I said. But I do not understand. No god can. Their bodies crumble and pass into earth. Their souls turn to cold smoke and fly to the underworld. There they eat nothing and drink nothing and feel no warmth. Everything they reach for slips from their grasp. A chill shivered across my skin. How do they bear it? As best they can. The torches were fading and the shadows lapped at us like dark water. Is it true that you refused to beg for pardon, and that you were not caught but confessed to Zeus freely what you did? It is. Why? His eyes were steady on mine. Perhaps you will tell me. Why would a god do such a thing? I had no answer. It seemed to me madness to invite divine punishment, but I could not say that to him, not when I stood in his blood. Not every god need be the same, he said. What I might have said in return, I do not know. A distant shout floated up the corridor. It is time for you to go now. Alecto does not like to leave me for long. Her cruelty springs fast as weeds and must any moment be cut again. It was a strange way to put it, for he was the one who would be cut. But I liked it, as if his words were a secret, a thing that looked like a stone, but inside was a seed. I will go then, I said. You will be well? Well enough, he said. What is your name? Circe. Did he smile a little? Perhaps I only flattered myself. I was trembling with all I had done, which was more than I had ever done in my life. I turned and left him, walking back through those obsidian corridors. In the feasting hall, gods still drank and laughed and lay across each other's laps. I watched them. I waited for someone to remark on my absence, but no one did, for no one had noticed. Why would they? I was nothing, a stone. One more nymph child among the thousand thousands. A strange feeling was rising in me, a sort of humming in my chest, like bees at winter's thaw. I walked to my father's treasury, filled with its glittering riches, golden cups shaped like the heads of bulls, necklaces of lapis and amber, silver tripods, and quartz-chiseled bowls with swan-neck handles. My favorite had always been a dagger, with an ivory haft carved like a lion's face. A king had given it to my father in hopes of gaining his favor. And did he? I once asked my father. No, my father had said. I took the dagger. In my room, the bronze edge shone in the taper's light, and the lion showed her teeth. Beneath lay my palm, soft and unlined. It could bear no scar, no festering wound. It would never wear the faintest print of age. I found that I was not afraid of the pain that would come. It was another terror that gripped me, that the blade would not cut at all, that it would pass through me like falling into smoke. It did not pass through. My skin leapt apart at the blade's touch, and the pain darted, silver and hot as lightning strike. The blood that flowed was red, for I did not have my uncle's power. The wound seeped for a long time before it began to re-knit itself. I sat watching it, and as I watched, I found a new thought in myself. I am embarrassed to tell it, so rudimentary it seems, like an infant's discovery that her hand is her own. But that is what I was then, an infant. The thought was this, that all my life had been murk and depths, but I was not a part of that dark water. I was a creature within it.